poet once said, hope is like the cork to the net which keeps the soul from sinking in despair.
But what if the disappointment and despair are too heavy for hope to be like the cork?
Two famously recognizable voices from the golden era of Hollywood, American singer and actor Bing Crosby and Russian-born star of stage and screen Yul Brynner. In 1959, in connection with World Refugee Year, Brynner was appointed a special consultant to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. Through various media, including film and radio, he helped highlight the plight of millions of refugees around the world. Almost six full decades later, the number of people displaced worldwide due to conflict or persecution has reached 68 million. In a video message to mark World Refugee Day, observed on the 20th of June, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres asks the world to think of the ongoing plight of the refugees.
As long as there are wars and persecution, there will be refugees. On World Refugee Day, I ask you to remember them. Their story is one of resilience, perseverance, and courage.
For this edition of Podcast Classics, we listen as Mr. Brynner solicits the aid of Mr. Crosby and other leading entertainers to tell some of the true life stories of refugees when the UN was just a few decades old. Here's Yul Brynner leading an all-star cast in Pattern of Our Lives.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whichever it is in your part of the world. For United Nations Radio is broadcasting around the globe, and since the earth is round, let me leave no one out. Let there be no difference, whether in time or otherwise. Tonight, a few of my friends have dropped in. I suppose this is what happens in millions of homes at this time of the year. That is, if you have a home. A home can be a palace. It can be a cubicle with cardboard walls. It may even be an open space in the desert, wherever a man can sit down and rest and know that he belongs. And there by the hearth, or by the campfire, it is the time for telling stories. So this is what we have done tonight, and we should like you to be one of us, my friends and I. I think you know them all.
This is Bing Crosby.
This is Joseph Schildkraut.
This is Doris Day.
This is Kim Novak.
This is Peter Ustinov.
This is Rhonda Fleming.
So here we are. Let's begin.
Life is filled with little mysteries. For example, what makes one man yearn to sail the seas in a ship, another to explore the skies in an airplane, and another, like Alexander Prevochik, to sink his roots in the soil. He was a farmer from generations of farmers. For almost 5 years, the Prevocheks lived in refugee camps. Those camps were located on the outskirts of cities, so one could not see forests or fields of grain or any of the other things that Alexander Prevochik loved. For he was a farmer from generations of farmers. And now he was like a sailor on the beach. During his spare time in the camp, and that is all there was, time, Alexander tried planting small vegetable gardens, but the land was too thin and tired. Alexander never complained, not even to his wife Sonia. Being a wise woman, she understood. She knew her husband felt as if he were, well, living in the middle of a desert.
The Provocheks, those are the people you want to tell us about. What about you, Doris Day?
He was 10 years old. And for 10 years, he lived in a refugee camp. In fact, he was born in a refugee camp. Actually, he had known a number of camps, 4 of them, to be exact. For the past 3.5 years, little Janos had been living in the camp at Latina, which is south of Rome on the road to Naples. Janos and his mother shared a room at the camp. The father had died 5 years before. He was a quiet and sensitive child who never complained. Like so many other children who lived in refugee camps, he had learned to adjust himself to many limitations.
I know about that. Children adapt themselves to the most miserable conditions. But what does it do to them in their health and in their later attitude to life? So now we know about young Janos. You, Kim Novak.
A refugee camp in the hills north of Rome. When Mrs. Hermes first came here, she was a comparatively young woman. But as you looked at her now, you'd never have guessed it. For her shoulders slumped with world weariness. Her sad eyes gazed out into the distance, and she seemed to have shut the door on life itself. Just before crossing the border and coming into the refugee camp, her husband Jan had suddenly died of a heart attack. There was only one good reason for living, her young daughter Sonia.
Did she try to leave the camp with her daughter, go to a new country?
It was difficult for a widow with a child to obtain a visa.
Of course. Unless a woman and a child are very lucky, the chances to find a country willing to take them are very slim. The regulations consider the risk too great that the woman would not be able to look after herself and the child. So, no visas. What is the tale you have to tell, Peter?
If you had been in a certain refugee camp in Italy several years ago, you might have seen him arrive, a broad-shouldered, sensitive man with determination written deeply in the lines of his face. The war had brought changes to his country and had driven him from his native land forever. Bronislav was studying English and reading books about the care of plants. He had found a sponsor in the United States for whom he was going to grow flowers. Only the final details of his trip had to be made. But then Bronislav met a girl. A girl who changed his plans. Her name was Elisabetta. Perhaps you're thinking they were married, went to the United States, lived happily ever after. But life is not a fairy tale. Elisabetta had a secret, not a very pretty secret. She knew she could never go with Bronislav if he left Italy. Epilepsy is a word that means rejection on an application for a visa. Bronislav cared very much for Elisabetta, so a few weeks later, the bells of the little church proclaimed them man and wife. Time passed, and the lines of determination faded from Bronislav's face. Elisabetta began to lose some of her prettiness. She and Bronislav started to quarrel. Their life together seemed to have no purpose anymore.
When you walk between the barracks of Europe's camps and look at the faces of men and women who live there, you can see thousands of Bronislavs and Elisabettas. Some visitors say, "Why do these people marry if they know that there is no future?" But people do fall in love, marry, and have children in the refugee camps. The heart does not become silent when the future grows dim. And you, Bing, is your story also about a camp in Europe?
This is Kai Tak Airport in Hong Kong. A chartered plane is warming up for a special flight. In a group of 52 boarding the plane are Ivan Bankowitz, his wife Maria, and Feofani, their daughter. This flight might be the end of their story, but in a way, it's the beginning. It concerns refugees from Europe, then China, and then in 1957, stranded in Hong Kong. Three bits of drifting humanity living on hope.
What are their chances?
Look at the medical report. Feofani, age 60, tuberculosis. Maria, aged 81, x-rays show TB lesion. Ivan, aged 85, totally blind.
How can you call this living in hope? At their age and with those handicaps, they don't stand a chance of ever getting a visa.
A poet once said, "Hope is like the cork to the net which keeps the soul from sinking in despair."
But what if the disappointment and despair are too heavy for hope to be like the cork? So now we know about the Bankiewicz family in Hong Kong. Three refugees from the mainland of China waiting for a country to admit them. Three aged and sick people. In Europe's camps, we have a young man and his bride, Bronislav and Elisabetta, whose married life is in danger because of the uselessness of their existence. We have a widow and a daughter, Mrs. Hermes and Sonia, who seem to have little or no chance of ever leaving. There is a boy called Janos. And we have a farmer without land in a refugee camp in Austria, Alexander and Sonia Provacek. The time does not stand still, not even in the world of waiting, which is the world of refugees. So
the Provaceks were moved to a camp in the rural part of Austria. The first Sunday in the new camp, a beautiful spring day, Alexander and his wife went for a long walk. The first crops could be seen everywhere. The sun was warm on their backs as Alexander and Sonia strolled down the road. Ahead of them, on the side of a shallow green valley, was a small farm. The farmer and his family could be seen working in the fields. Beyond, in another field, a few cows were grazing. "Well, in another month, the way this weather is holding up," Alexander said to his wife, "that farmer over there will start to cut his hay. His field corn is coming along nicely. I do hope he has sprayed the apple trees." And then Alexander was silent for a moment, but then exclaimed, "Oh, I would work for that farmer for nothing." And one day, quite by accident, he came across a deserted farmhouse set on what looked to be about 10 acres of long, untilled land. The house had a hole in its roof, one of the walls sagged, the front door was missing. "Well, I could be quite happy here, you know," Alexander said, if only I could realize a dream."
A dream to move into that deserted farmhouse, come to grips with the land, force it to yield crops, and in return for sweat and tired limbs, earn the right to laugh and to enjoy the peaceful moments of rest in what they can call home. At least now, Provacek has got a dream of definite shape with roots in one spot of land. What about Bronislav and Elisabetta? Have they got dreams?
Land was for sale in the Pontine Marshes. Bronislav went to the estate office. "What about transportation?" asked the agent. "The seed, the tools, the pump to water the plants. Do you realize the hardship of life on the Pontine Marshes?" "Why, I can do it," said Bronislav, "if I may use the deposit to buy seed and tools." "I'm sorry," said the agent, "but without the money..." Bronislav returned to the refugee camp in despair.
"Yes. Now suppose we could just say, all right, the money you need, we will give it to you.
Repayable, interest-free, on a 10-year basis after the first 2 years."
"And what would we have?"
"There is now a village called Aprilia on the Pontine Marshes, where more than one refugee family has found a place beneath the warm Italian sun. The name of Bronislav the gardener is well known, for what would a wedding be without flowers, or a birth, or even death?"
"What about the Provacheks?"
"Well, today a visitor to Alexander Provacek's farm sees a neat, well-kept farm whose fields are laden with crops. There is now more livestock and... there are 2 young Provacheks.
"And this is not a dream. We end the cases of Bronislav and Elisabetta and Alexander and his wife with children born in a home where they are loved, where they grow up, where they themselves may one day have children." What efforts of kindness do we need for Mrs. Hermes and her daughter Sonia? For the young boy Janos and the Bankovitz family to give them a chance.
Mrs. Hermes didn't even ask for a chance anymore. And little by little, other refugees would pack up their meager belongings and set out for the new countries. But Mrs. Hermes remained. It was almost like serving a lifetime sentence. Only Mrs. Hermes had not committed a crime.
How can she be helped? A group of French people in Morocco last year invited children from refugee camps in Italy.
And among them was young Sonia Hermes. Sonia wrote every week to her mother exciting letters about a new life. Before the holiday was ended, the United Nations representative came to Mrs. Hermes. He had news for her.
The family where Sonia was staying.
They offered to take her into their home as a housekeeper. Naturally, Sonia would live with her.
And now Janos. Somewhere in America, a family has agreed to let him and his mother come to their home.
Janos's mother hurried to tell her son the wonderful news. But when she did, she was bewildered by Janos's reaction. "America is a very long way from here," he said. "Will we like it in America, Mother? Everything is so different." "Oh, I'm sure we will," his mother answered. "You will go to school, and I will work hard for both of us." She paused and looked at him. "You don't seem very excited." Perhaps Janos's mother couldn't quite realize that even a child, after an entire lifetime spent in a refugee camp, might have defensively retreated from harsh reality into resignation. On the morning Janos and his mother were to leave, a camp official said to the boy, "Do you know what today is, Janos?" "Yes, it is my birthday," Janos said. "Today I am 10. "Your birthday? Why, you should have a party." With a pathetic shrug, Janos said, "I've never had a party." When the plane was several hours out, the UN official accompanying the group asked Janos, "Do you know what day this is?" "It is my birthday," came the reply. The official gave a signal. A smiling stewardess walked down the aisle with her hands held high. She was carrying a small birthday cake with barely room for 10 lighted candles. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. And so, at 15,000 feet over the Atlantic, for the first time in his life, Janos had a birthday party. The voices that sang the familiar music came forth in a half dozen languages, but it made no difference. Janos understood.
We're left only with the three bits of drifting humanity, the bank of its family, living on hope in Hong Kong. What has happened to them?
Denmark offered to accept all three of the Bankowitz family. With part of their expenses provided by a United Nations grant, they would receive treatment at the Serpeng Sanatorium. And when cured, there would be a permanent resettlement in Denmark.
Duty be patients and a blind man offered a haven. What does it mean? They leave Hong Kong, they fly to a new country and a new life.
And Ivan sees, not with his eyes but with his heart, how the world community could reach out to three lonely people and erase a dark yesterday with a hopeful tomorrow.
Rhonda Fleming has the last story about people who did not live in a camp, but came to a country asking for a place to live.
Come along with me down a back street of Athens. It's a quiet neighborhood, although sometimes the children are not. At times, some of the neighbors sing, and when they do, all the others can hear them. But no one minds. They all feel like a big family. Oh, there's gossip, of course, mostly about one's friends. Or maybe a day's outing to Piraeus, the port of Athens, where you can eat wonderful shrimp. This neighborhood is a little world in itself. Some time ago, a middle-aged couple, both strangers, settled in one of the rooms of a house owned by Mr. Zandra Mopopoulos. Now, landlords are not always the most beloved people, as we all know, but Mr. Mopopoulos was an exception. He was very popular. He's the one to see when you're in trouble, and he won't send you away with only a piece of advice. So he called on his new tenants. The Boganovs weren't easy to converse with. In fact, they looked frightened. Unrest forced them to leave their home, their business, their friends, and cross the border. On the advice of a friend, Mr. Boganov went to see a representative of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. A grant of money, $50, provided 6 months' rent for a one-room flat in Athens, which the representative had found for him. Oh, this was a wonderful help, but Mr. Boganov needed a job, too. That's when Mr. Zandra Mopopoulos went into action. He made a round of the neighbors. We've got to help these people, he said. They're refugees. You and I don't know what it means to leave home and go to a country where we don't know the language. But you and I do know what it means to be helped when in need. This man is a barber. His wife is an excellent seamstress. They're decent people. You, Miropas, you need a haircut. And Paul, you look like you could do with a shave. And you, Mrs. Petridis, why, surely you and your friends may have some things to be mended. And today, drop into the local coffee house almost any night, and you'll see Mr. Boganov, his work finished, sitting with his friends. Each one is sipping a cup of thick Greek coffee and smoking a flat Greek cigarette. As for the conversation, naturally, that also is in Greek, Mr. Boganov's new language.
And now I'm going to tell a little story. There was a man who was quite rich and terribly bored because he had all the things he wanted in the world. And because he had them all, there was no excitement left which he had not experienced. One day he went on a safari, and somehow or other he lost his companions and suddenly found himself all alone. He did not know where he was, nor whether he would find his way again. He had no food, nobody. Frantically, he went on and on, searching for his way back. At the end, he was just stumbling blindly on. There was only one thought in his mind, to get back. His wealth, his friends, his servants, his knowledge, nothing mattered anymore to him except getting back. He was just a panic-stricken, lost human being. And then suddenly, in the clearing of the jungle, he saw a native peasant woman. And in that instant, all his fears went from him. He cried and he laughed, going forward, knowing that he was no longer alone, that he was no longer lost, and that before him was another human being.
As we have often heard, man does not live by bread alone.
Mrs. Hermes's thank you speech was very short. God bless you, she said. You've given me new life.
Here's to my three graces. Charity for the past, faith in the present, and hope for the future.
Yes, hope is like the cork to the net, which keeps the soul from sinking.
In our stories, we have brought all those who were lost and without a home to a place where they would once more belong. And the stories we told are true stories, true case histories that did happen. In this program, we have left no one out. But in the camps in Europe, in the camps in North Africa, in the camps in the Middle East, in the camps in the Far East, there are still millions of refugees waiting. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, good night.
That was Yul Brynner, former special consultant to the UN on refugees, presenting a cast of Hollywood A-listers in Pattern of Our Lives. And that concludes this edition of Podcast Classics. Remember, you can find a wealth of classic UN programming by visiting the unique and vast UN Audiovisual Library at www.unmultimedia.org/avlibrary. I'm Omar Musni with UN News. Thank you for listening.